Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
You know, the leaves What's up, everyone? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And what is going on? What is going on with the world? What is going on with the markets? It doesn't appear that anybody really has a clue as to what's going on. I think it's interesting to watch the supposed smartest guys or gals in the room, and they don't have a clue. Now, do we find that interesting that the people that are supposed to be watching out for us have no idea what's next? When's the last time we heard from somebody from the Fed? They're hiding in a corner. Is it not interesting that we no longer worry about what they're going to do? Have they all become totally delusional as to what's happening? I mean, what we're seeing now is the bond market making an all-out push to see rates go higher. It's a simple fact that markets tip you off on what they think should be happening. And is it not interesting that the bond market sits here every single day? First of all, has become the unbelievably most volatile product on the exchanges. I think that's the first thing to look at is something that has been historically, and I mean historically, a slower moving product. On rates and yields, that all of a sudden has become the most volatile product on the floors. I mean, is that not the first thing we should look at? Now, you may say, no, what does it mean? Well, it certainly means that there's some concern and there's some confusion out there, because as we look at what goes on in bond markets, and you see yields moving as much as they're moving each and every day, that should be the first sign of warning. Okay, you know, again, as investors, as traders, as prognosticators, you're always looking for signs of what may or may not happen next. Now, there is no guarantee that the bond market is right. And in fact, I disagree with what they're pricing in. However, it is the fixed income market is the biggest market in the world. And they are certainly trying to muscle up the market and what the Fed should be doing. But you can just see unbelievable movement here as the futures from the bonds have broken down through the bottom end of their consolidation range and have now pushing yields, you know, once again higher. Now, are we going to see that 10-year go up? You know, I still think and look for 1.5%, but you know, right now we're at 2.2. And, you know, can they continue this? But where is the Fed? They've been hiding. We haven't had the usual dose of their BS telling us, you know, what should be next. Is it not amazing how we still have the major experts telling us that, well, because of the free and cheap money, we will continue to move higher? And again, I'm not saying that they're wrong, because certainly I don't know that they're wrong. I don't know that they're right. I believe, based on what we're seeing here, that they are wrong, that we can't see much more upside because there is not enough evidence that the economy is improving. Now, we talk about this often here and have done so for an extended period of time, but is the economy improving? Has your personal wealth, your personal business, which is your home, have things improved? Are you seeing this dramatic improvement that we are being sold on? This bill of goods that everybody seems to think that we are seeing such dramatic improvement in the economy. And if you do see it, I would love to hear your opinion of where you're seeing it. Because as far as I can see, the regular economy, not the stock market, but the economy is in dire straits. And what I want to know is, if you've got kids, how are you taking care of your kids? Where is the money going to come from to take care of the extra activities that they do? You know, I guess I'm bitching today because I just got the tuition bills for next year. And, you know, obviously, I don't know how an average person can pay these kind of bills. I don't know anybody that, you know, that I've talked to recently that has an extra, you know, $50,000 cash laying around. When we heard the other day that the average American, if they had an emergency bill for $400 or $500, they'd have to borrow the money. But of course, that goes back to where are they going to borrow the money from? You know, you can't continue to destroy a class of people with nonsense and BS, looking at the overall picture of nothing. And this is, again, a major problem and the separation of pushing the middle class into a corner. And what will they do? What will we do? I mean, I'm part of it. I mean, you know, is this the time that the middle class finally steps up and says, enough? Is this the time when we, the middle class, say, you know what? We need to vote for somebody who really believes in smaller government and somebody who believes in taking care of the people versus taking care of the special interest groups and themselves. That I find hard to believe, that we continue to look at this and ignore it. I think that, you know, eventually we will see some sort of financial revolt. I think that you can only push down people so long before they spring back and say, I can't take it anymore. Now, you know, we've talked a little bit about Hillary Clinton going to raise $2 billion to get elected to the presidency. $2 billion. I mean, are we not sick? I mean, is that not, first of all, it's a sick number. But are we not sick as a society that many of us are going to contribute to that $2 billion? I mean, you have to wonder why somebody is going to spend and why we allow it. I mean, we are continuing to allow the politicians and government to steal the money. I mean, that's the only way I can put it. Because what does it take? Why do we have to have it at this point? I think it's interesting. I think it stinks. And I'm pretty upset about it. But unfortunately, I'll have to bitch about this later as we're coming up to a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out of here for a break and we'll be right back with Jane King after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. When love runs high. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and as always, I bring in my friend, one of the stars of the business world, Jane King, Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report. What's up, Jane?
Hey, Todd. I'm doing well this morning. Ready for summer. New York's been a little chilly this week, so I'm ready for a nice warm weekend ahead.
It looked a little chilly and a little rainy. It didn't look very nice there, and of course, not a lot of nice things going on around the world here. What are you seeing out there, Jane? What are you seeing is from your perspective?
Well, of course, the big story this week, besides the jobs report, is Greece. And I mean, I'm just watching in utter fascination the Greeks negotiate or stand firm on what they want when they have very little leverage at all. I mean, it's really very interesting to watch them demand so much and kind of flat-out lie, right? I mean, at least from my perspective, that they say there's a deal, and then the other side says there's no deal, and it's just been really interesting, and you just wonder, you know, what the Germans are thinking with all this going on.
Do you think that Greece has any meaning whatsoever to what should or what will happen to our stock market?
Well, I guess the question is whether this might set a precedent for other bigger countries. I mean, with Greece would leave the euro, does this mean that other countries may leave? Will Spain leave? Will Italy leave? What happens to the euro? And if it does start to be a domino effect, it probably will cause some disruption for a while. Although we've been talking about this for 3 years. I mean, we should be used to the fact that this may happen and perhaps have it priced in, although I think the markets tend to think that there's going to be a deal. They're going to come up with something and give Greece more time or some kind of deal to let them make this payment, some kind of, you know, help with that. And maybe that's what the market's counting on. And if the Germans, you know, say to Greece, forget about it, then that could be a big surprise. And we'll see. I'm sure the Germans are looking back and going, why did we ever do this in the first place?
Well, I agree with that. And you know, my theory has been all along is, the reason that Greece, that they're trying to keep Greece in, I mean, I think, first of all, I think Merkel, given her choice with no ramifications, would throw them out on her ass. That's my opinion. But she is concerned about if they let Greece default, then will Portugal or Spain or Italy then default? Because those three have some real value. Greece, as far as an economic base, has no real value to the euro currency whatsoever. What do you think about that?
No, I mean, they don't. I mean, I don't know what their GDP is, but it's, I'm sure, less than California.
Less than the state of Indiana.
State. So what is it?
It's less than Indiana.
Okay, we'll see. Okay, so there you go. I mean, and, you know, it's just, it's totally different culture. I mean, Germans are just so different than the Greeks in terms of, you know, how they look at life. So it's just surprising that, you know, I guess they were very optimistic when they reached this deal, but I just don't understand. Like, they've got a lot of hubris to be able to get this far and not really make any changes whatsoever, and still they don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, the nice thing about being from Greece is that you have to go to work when you're 21 and you get to retire when you're 22, so it's a wonderful way to, you know, collect all those entitlements that they like to have.
Which we could all do that and pay no taxes along the way. It sounds like, you know, it sounds like a great way to live a life, no way to run an economy.
You know, and so as we talk about, you know, an economy, and something this week came out and struck me as, you know, strange, is I've been saying, and you know, you partially agree, but, you know, we think that the middle class is still not really beneficial and benefiting from, you know, the overall movement in the economy. But then, of course, we hear early in the week that Hillary Clinton is going to raise $2 billion to run for president. What are your thoughts from your perspective?
Well, you know, I guess living in New York, it's not shocking. I mean, we've had billion-dollar presidential runs. I think Mayor Bloomberg maybe spent about that much running for mayor. So I'm just more surprised by Hillary's continued ability to stay at the top of the Democrat field, although there's not. And Bernie Sanders is getting some momentum. He's far left, but he's attracting crowds in Iowa. People want to hear what he has to say. But she's going to be announcing her candidacy on Roosevelt Island in New York. I mean, Todd, have you ever been to Roosevelt Island? I've lived in New York for 16 years. I have never been to Roosevelt Island. You get there by a tram, and which sometimes stops in the middle of the sky. I mean, it's just fits her personality in terms of how she does what seem to be open and welcoming and want people to come and ask her questions. She wants to make it as difficult as possible to get to that press conference.
Well, I mean, the whole Clinton regime, you know, is kind of, you know, they've been pretty slippery, right? And they've been able to escape many deals that 99% of the world would never been able to escape. And it's amazing, you know, as you even go back into, you know, the cattle trade, you know, with Hillary Clinton way back when. I mean, you know, how many people you know that don't have to have margin and you can make $100,000 off of $3,000? It's pretty interesting as to how they get
that
away with those.
That kind of started
things.
The whole making money, like, how, you know, how they make money off of nothing kind of thing that they've been doing for 20 years. Well, you know, I look back at that and I think about that and I think about the times we were in. I know Bill Clinton was president, the economy was great, everybody was so confident, he was undisputed on top of the world. We had very low unemployment, everybody was making money in the stock market. And, you know, really, there was not much competition there. I mean, he ran against Bob Dole. You know, a lot of people felt like Bob Dole was kind of past his prime. And so I think a lot of it depends on the person running against him, too, and whether we see that. Now, I do sense that millennials, as they come up to become adults, that they're more skeptical of this and less tolerant than previous generations were of some of the things that went on in the 90s. So I think there might be a different era. I don't think she can apply the same principles that they did in the 90s to get out of these messes that she can today. I think have different standards today. I'm hoping.
I agree with you, and I think that, you know, I think there's going to be, I hope there'll be some change. And again, I don't care. I just want, you know, the United States to run like a company, like it's supposed to, and run smooth and clean. And, you know, but it just, it's amazing when we look around and we see the waste of money and you know, the tragedies that are happening within the middle class. I mean, I don't know if you heard the other day that in the middle class, the average American, if they got a surprise bill for $500 or $600, they couldn't even pay it out of their checkbook.
I did see that, and there was another study out this week. 30% of Americans have no money saved for retirement. I mean, this could be a real crisis. What are we going to do with people who are in their 50s and 60s now, when their 80s and 90s are not able to work? But yet they need health care, perhaps for years, like very expensive health care. You know, Medicare will take care of that, but that's going to be a huge amount of people, and I don't know how financially that's going to happen. And we're not really doing anything now to address that at all.
No, and we have a tendency of, you know, kicking the can down the road, and, you know, we have not addressed Social Security, which needs to be addressed. I mean, obviously they're going to be out of money. Or already are out of money. And of course, we haven't addressed a lot of the government agencies like the post office. I mean, we're still living in about 1950 when it comes to some of these things. And of course, we've seen a lot of major changes through the world since then. So, Jane King, give us your forecast. You know, we've got about 6 months to go in the year. How do you see the end of the year taking place?
Well, we're about dead money on the year so far on the stock market, so haven't done a lot so far. I've been better to put it in China. China has been pretty good this year, but of course they had a pretty rocky week last week. But, you know, I guess I see this year as being flat to negative. We've had an amazing run-up since 2009 in stocks. There hasn't been a lot behind it. We're still struggling in terms of the economy. We've got some good reports here and there. Housing has been an amazing turnaround. But after that, there's really not a lot. People are getting jobs, but it's not robust. Incomes aren't going up that much. So I'm going to call the rest of the year flat to lower.
And I would probably agree with that. I mean, again, there's issues that have to be dealt with. And now, you, since you are, you know, basically national, right? You're all over the country. Are you seeing anything really good somewhere or anything really bad somewhere?
Well, you know, the Western U.S. seems to be doing really well. I talk to Utah Salt Lake City Station every day, and there's about every week some report comes out on how great their economy is, how they've added the most jobs. We've got a very business-friendly state government, so that has a lot to do with that. Denver's housing market, the hottest in the country right now, so Denver's doing really well. You tend to see the coasts, especially the East Coast, not doing so well. Florida seems to be coming back in a lot of ways. And Texas is recovering from the oil price drop. So they've got a much more diverse economy now. They've got airlines and technology. So it doesn't hurt them as bad as it did in the 80s. So there's a lot going on in other parts of the country. But still, as a nation, it just feels like a large amount of people are still struggling.
And that is the world, according to our friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report. Jane King, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That was Jane King from the Ka-Ching Report, Lila Max Media. She's always awesome on the show. This is The Bubba Show. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and I was listening to something interesting, and I wanted to share with you Mark Stein on American irrelevance around the world, and I want you to check this out.
Welcome back to Hannity. More troubling news out of Iran tonight, as a shocking report from the New York Times, of all places, shows a brazen move by Iran's government toward the development of a nuclear weapon. According to the Times, quote, with only 1 month left before a deadline to complete a nuclear deal with Iran, international inspectors have reported that Tehran's stockpile of nuclear fuel has increased about 20% over the last 18 months of negotiations, partially undercutting the Obama administration's contention that the Iranian program had, quote, been frozen during that period. Here with Reaction is the co-author of Climate Change, The Fact. Columnist Mark Stein is with us. It's almost, to me, breathtaking that this is where we are. In the course of these negotiations, they cheated in this instance, as identified by the New York Times. We discovered another nuclear facility that they had hidden. They said the destruction of Israel is non-negotiable. The top mullahs are chanting death to America. They're the number one state sponsor of terror, and they're fighting multiple proxy wars. And still Obama wants to make this deal. With his words, they'll have zero breakout time in 11 years. Why?
Right.
Can you explain this? It's inexplicable.
Well, yeah, I think they concluded, the Iranians concluded, that these talks exist because the Western powers lack the will to prevent them getting a nuclear weapon. Once you reach the conclusion that Obama and the P5 permanent members of the Security Council are actually not going to do anything to stop you getting a nuclear weapon, then you can join the talks and string along the talks because you know that Obama and these other fellas, John Kerry, they like chit-chatting, they like shooting the breeze. You can string them along for 18 months and if you're lucky, you'll get an agreement plus nuclear weapons. And that's really what Iran's goal was. And that's what's amazing to me. They're actually within reach of getting all sanctions lifted, being reintegrated into the world community, which Obama has set as his target, and at the same time also becoming a nuclear power. In other words, what didn't they get? What didn't they get?
They get the nuclear weapon. They get a $50 $8 billion signing bonus. They get all their money back so that that will facilitate the advancement of the nuclear program. Well, what did you think? So the New York Times breaks this story about a 20% increase. Again, that was supposed to be frozen. And you got Jobs for Jihadis, Marie Harf, in a Twitter war with the New York Times, even though these numbers came from the IAEA and their inspections.
Right.
It's not like they made up these numbers of the New York Times.
No, no. This is the official UN body, the IAEA, which has established that Iran, all the time it was in Geneva, in Lausanne, participating in these talks, and is supposed to be destroying 96% of this stuff in the months after a deal, has actually spent the months before the deal increasing it by 20%. And if you look at what has happened in recent months with the fading of American power in the region, it has been matched by the rise of Iran. Iraq's future essentially will be determined by Iran and ISIS. America is irrelevant to that. Yemen's future will be determined by Iran. Syria's future will be determined by Iran and ISIS. Maybe ultimately Saudi Arabia's and Jordan's future will be determined by Iran and ISIS. And the United States is simply not a player anymore. It has effectively withdrawn from the scene in the last 6 years.
It's interesting you say that, because the president claims that not only is he not divisive, but he also says that under his leadership, America is the most respected country on earth. Here's what he said.
People don't remember, when I came into office, the United States in world opinion ranked below China and just barely above Russia. And today, once again, the United States is the most respected country on earth. And part of that, I think, is because of the work that we did to re-engage the world and say that we want to work with you as partners with mutual interest and mutual respect. It's on that basis that we were able to end two wars, while still focusing on the very real threat of terrorism.
Now, wait a minute. China is now pursuing their territorial ambitions. Right. Russia, we know Putin has no respect for him whatsoever. We know that the Egyptians, Jordanians, the Saudis, and the Israelis have decided to go it alone. And I have that on firsthand knowledge that they've decided that. How does he make such a statement?
Yeah, this is the post-American world. By the way, for one thing, Sean, it's pathetic for the leader of the global superpower to be boasting that he's come number one in a Miss Congeniality poll. I mean, this in itself is incredible. I can't recall Winston Churchill or Bismarck ever standing up and saying, hey, the world had a Miss World competition, and I came first in the swimsuit round. It's pathetic. But it also neglects the fact that ranking is, as much as anything, a measure of American irrelevance in the world. As you mentioned, all the Arab countries, the Saudis and the Gulf monarchies, who are now Israel's best friend. The foreign ministers of all the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia are on the phone to Israel every night because they know they're having to go it alone in the post-American world. The Czechs and the Poles and the Baltic states are beginning to get that message. Out in the South China Sea, they're beginning to get that message. It's very easy to win the Miss Congeniality Award when you're doing nothing. The other recent poll of global respect, for whatever that means, was a BBC one, and the number one country was Germany, and the number two country was Canada. If you become irrelevant to global affairs in the way that Germany has been in the last 60 years, it's not, and the way America has gone in the last 6 years, then it's easy to be Miss Congeniality.
Let me play. Obama goes on Channel 2 in Israel, one of their bigger channels, and he attacks Netanyahu, says he's driven by fear, and then suggests that Israel's in danger of losing their credibility. And I'm thinking, Netanyahu just won by a landslide in spite of Obama's so-called influence and attempts to help defeat him, and he's still angry about the speech, but I want to get your take on it. Watch this.
I think Prime Minister Netanyahu is somebody who's predisposed to think of security first, to think perhaps that peace is naive, to see the worst possibilities as opposed to the best possibilities in Arab partners or Palestinian partners. And so I do think that right now, those politics and those fears are driving the government's response.
fears. They're firing rockets by the thousands into this country. Right. What is he talking about?
Yeah, he's talking as if this is somehow irrational. When he says Israel's credibility is on the line, no, Israel's existence is on the line. Netanyahu has to do something that Obama doesn't. Obama can bunk off and play golf and go on television with Jay-Z and Beyonce and do all this stuff. Netanyahu goes to work every morning knowing that if he makes the slightest miscalculation of the psychology of his neighboring states, it's the end of Israel's existence. It's gone. And he does this against a background, for example, where there are murderous attacks on the Jewish Museum in Brussels, where there are attacks on synagogues, on schools, in the wider Jewish diaspora, and in which Jew hate has in effect metastasized. And so this idea that he's somehow some eccentric fellow who's just got a bee in his bonnet about national security, and why doesn't he realize it's all about transgender rights like the rest of us do? I mean, this is a completely pitiful response from a guy who's sitting thousands of miles away from it in Washington and doesn't have to live with the realities that Obama does, but Netanyahu does.
And he says that climate change is the biggest military national security threat we have. Here's my take. Tell me if you agree or disagree.
Costas Ramadi, climate change. The rising seas swept away all those American weapons in Ramadi. Amazing.
Right. I think that Obama is insecure. That Bibi is smarter than him, that Bibi is tougher than him, that he's more principled than him, more courageous than him. He understands evil in our time, and I think Obama knows it. And that's why I think it's personal. What's your take on why you think it's so personal?
I think it is personal. I do think he's an insecure man, and that leads him to, actually, apart from anything else, just some remarks in appallingly bad taste when he said, apparently, to David Axelrod, that he was, in effect, the first Jewish president.
Yeah,
he's the nearest to a Jew who's
Jewish.
Ever sat in the Oval Office.
Unbelievable.
And that's completely ridiculous. And I do think he understands that, in a sense, not just Netanyahu, but Putin and Ayatollah Khamenei in Tehran, that all these guys are right. smarter than him, in a sense that they're keeping their eye on the prize, and he seems to be just doing things out of kind of strange, weird psychological insecurities. But it's very.
And what do you think about all that? And I think that tells a big story, and I think that tells a big story of what the world leaders think about our leader, and of course. Our leader from a standpoint of being an actual leader and knowing how to react under conditions that are not textbook related to be a problem. And of course, to me, we need to be better. We need to be stronger. And we need to take back America to the America we believe in. And these are some of the things that you'll get in the Bubba Report as well. We talk about these all the time, and we write about these political issues, and it's the June Bubba Report is out. I recommend you go to thebubbashow.org now, sign up. It's $99 a year, and you jump in and grab your copy of the Bubba Report right now. 12 issues a year at least, with about 200 years of overall experience in the markets. But we're going to step out of here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace. Music is a world within itself. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace hanging out with you. And, you know, if you don't think terrorism is a problem in this country, I think you ought to listen to this. Let's go check it out and see what's going on.
The reporter who broke this story from the Boston Globe, Maria Kramer, is with us. Maria, what first of all, what new developments do you have, and what about this mosque do you know?
Well, what happened today was one of the men who was allegedly conspiring with Osama Rahim, the man who police say attacked officers and FBI agents, David Wright was brought into federal court today. He faces charges of conspiracy. Basically, the authorities say that he told Osama Rahim to destroy any evidence if he was going to go after he was going to behead a police officer. And, what's going to happen now is he'll be detained. He's facing up to 5 years in prison. And there's a search for a third man who is part of this plot. And that search continues.
Boy, Boston's been through a lot. If it's the same mosque as the Sarnav brothers, and as Catherine Herridge reported, other radical terror suspects, what do we know about that mosque?
Well, the mosques that you're describing, yes, it's true. I mean, these are mosques that have attracted people who have later been connected to terrorism. It's also important to remember that these mosques attract thousands of Muslims who come to worship every day. And what we do know about the mosque in Boston, where Osama Rahim attended, was that he really was not a regular. We actually interviewed somebody at that mosque who spoke to him and his wife, and they left the mosque because they thought it was too liberal. So it's unclear how strong a connection he had to that mosque. It doesn't sound like it was very strong.
All right. Great job, by the way, by the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Appreciate it, Maria. Thank you. Here with reaction is former NYPD Strategic Intelligence Unit Detective Sean Foley. Sean, there is this connection. There seems to be a connection. How deep does law enforcement now need to go if there are multiple suspects coming out of one particular mosque?
Well, Sean, it's very difficult to profile or investigate a location. As Maria had said, thousands of people go to that investigation. So it's very difficult for law enforcement to focus on a location. Rather, you have to focus on an individual and individual's activity.
Okay.
But that being
if the number of individuals seem to be have one common point of affiliation, it seems that we've got to pay attention to that, no?
Yeah, you do, and it's important for us to be in touch with the leadership of those institutions and for them to understand what our goals are. There's a lot of distrust right now, and what they need to understand is by helping us, they're helping themselves, because they don't want to be looked at as a potential terrorist just because they go to a mosque.
Cases, we've got to look out. Look, Boston has been through a lot, and if they have that one connection, I think it's certainly an area that needs to be pursued and understood, what's being taught there, et cetera. Let me ask you about, are we to believe that ISIS is here in the U.S., or do you believe that these are ISIS-inspired, either lone wolves or inspired by other radicals in the country? Do you believe, and is law enforcement now coming to the belief system that ISIS is here in America?
Yes, I believe it. We saw Anwar al-Awlaki have an influence on similar types of activity and in the United States. He inspired people to act. Most of them had contact with him, but ISIS has definitely changed that. It's become more widespread.
All right, Sean Foley, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. And here now with more reactions, syndicated radio talk show host Howie Carr out of Boston. Howie, what are people telling you, and what do you believe about this particular mosque, say mosque, Sarnav Brothers? What's your take?
Well, I think this is a case, Sean, where there is no gray area here. There's not going to be any dispute about what happened. The video exists. This guy advanced on them. They have it on tape. A few minutes before he comes out with the knife, he's talking about killing some of the quote-unquote boys in blue, and he actually advances on them. They actually have in the affidavit, I don't know if you've seen it yet, Sean, his final words. FBI agents and the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was what his brother said were his final words. What his real final words were, the cops say, he's got the knife in his hand, and the cops say, and the FBI agents say, drop your weapon. And he says, you drop yours.
Well, then that
famous last word, Sean.
Famous last
That's
words.
That's the epitaph for him.
Well, here's what I want to know here, because you're right about the brother. The brother tried to almost pull an Al Sharpton, if you will, by saying, oh, they shot him in the back.
Yeah.
False. His last words were, I can't breathe. False. So this was one big lie. But if we didn't have the tape, that could be a problem once again for officers, no?
Yeah, exactly. This is worked out very well indeed for the officers, and you know the community leaders so-called who saw the tape today, the surveillance video. There's one guy from a mosque in Roxbury, and he's had rather a checkered past. He used to work at Northeastern, and he has a radical background. And he said the tape was vague, but he specifically said, even though it seems vague, I can say for sure that this guy Raheem did not A, have a cell phone in his hand, and B, was not shot in the back. So, Sean, it seems to me it's not very vague at all. This is a cut and dried incident here. And again, they have all these.
There's no ambiguity
on tape. Where?
Yeah.
No. I'm gonna take out some of the boys in blue.
Clear.
I mean, what else can that mean? There's no code there, is there?
What do you know about that mosque, considering the same mosque Sarnar brothers went to?
I don't know what goes on in that mosque. I just know that there's been a lot of problems with radicals here in Massachusetts going back to 9/11. I mean, two out of the four planes flew out of Boston, and I think a lot of it has to do with just sort of the general political ambience in Massachusetts. You know, it's this state welcomes so-called refugees like the Sarnievs. If you're a refugee in the United States, you know, most of them have stories that don't hold up under any scrutiny, but they're never checked. The Sarnievs were on welfare from the moment they arrived here. They were welcomed here. The former governor, Deval Patrick, said even after he had read the manifesto in the boat from Jokar Sarnaev, he said, he told Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation the next Sunday. Schieffer asked him, do we know the motives of these guys? And Deval Patrick said, we don't know the motives of these young fellas. That's what he called them, young fellas. He at a 9/11 commemoration one year when he was governor, he said 9/11 was about a failure of human beings to love one another. So there is this atmosphere politically that is somewhat welcoming to these type of people.
Howie, we haven't had John in a while. We miss you. All the best to our friends in Boston. You guys have been through a lot. Thanks for being with us.
And don't we find that these are problems that need to be addressed and taken care of? I mean, this is something that, you know, I can't really comprehend that we continue to let stuff like this slide by, you know, and it's not a priority to our leader and what is going on. I mean, can we not finally say that the time is now for us to be the aggressor instead of being passive and waiting for bad to happen? Again, I don't understand why we at this point, I don't want any soldiers. I don't want boots on the ground. You know, all these things we talk about, but isn't that a reason? Isn't that the reason we do have a military? Isn't that the reason to protect our country? And do we not think that our country is in trouble? Do we need more examples of terrorism? Do we need more? Do we have to wait till another 10,000 die before we go after and go on the aggressive? To me, it doesn't make any sense. I think it needs to be addressed. I think we need to be aggressive. I think our commander-in-chief needs to say, it's time. Let's go kick their ass. That's what I think. And unfortunately, that'll do it for today's Bubba Show. As always, it's great to have you on board. And I love bringing the show to you. It's one of the highlights of my day to share with you. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org and get yourself hooked up for the Bubba Report. We'll keep you informed. We'll keep you putting in better spots for investing. And until tomorrow, same time, same station, The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. See you tomorrow. Have a great day. Your everlasting summer.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.